Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of March 31st. Fear is mounting that the war in Iraq will bring the global economy skidding to a halt, after surveys released last week show that consumers on both sides of the Atlantic are more pessimistic than they have been in a decade. Last Friday, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey showed U.S. confidence at its lowest level since September of 1993, thanks to uncertainties about the war, high energy costs, and unemployment. In Britain, the Martin Hamblin Barometer for Household Spending showed its lowest reading since December 1995. Consumer pessimism is particularly bad news for the U.S. and U.K. economies because rampant consumer spending has propped up economic growth in both the States and Britain over the past year. Now analysts fear that people in both nations will tighten their belts, threatening fragile growth for these economic powerhouses. Fears that this war is not going according to plan and could last months instead of weeks are placing global economic growth in peril. On Thursday, the International Monetary Fund warned that prolonged economic uncertainty as a result of the war in Iraq could, quote, reinforce the headwind against global economic recovery, end quote. On Friday, the World Bank confirmed that it was downgrading forecasts for global growth this year from 2.4 to 2.3%. On Sunday, the Canadian Chamber of Commerce announced that economic growth in Canada this year will be lower than expected because of uncertainties about the war, down to 2.7% from the 3.2% rate predicted late last year. The Chamber warned that a war of 6 months or more would have the potential to severely impact U.S. economic growth, hurting Canadian exports to the U.S. Nonetheless, the Canadian economy is expected to outperform that of our neighbors to the south. On the stock markets, losses started piling up last Monday when the Dow Jones Index dropped 307 points and Canada's Toronto Stock Exchange lost almost 172 points. North American stock markets surrendered the gains they had made just before and in the first 2 days of the war. Last week, oil prices continued to rise as the U.S. dollar continued to fall, both trends also linked to the conflict in Iraq. As the war in Iraq threatens the stability of international oil and gas supplies, interest in Russia's oil and gas reserves is rising. Already the world's largest supplier of natural gas, Russia is now vying against Saudi Arabia for the top position in oil extraction and production. Russia is the world's third largest energy producer after Saudi Arabia and the U.S., churning out almost 350 million tons of oil each year. Russia has also become a world leader in energy exports. The vast majority of Russian oil and gas exports are delivered to Central and Western Europe, but Russian energy companies have been working to increase sales in the U.S. and Asia. All across northern Russia and Siberia, companies and the government are building pipelines and oil loading stations in ice-free ports to meet the growing international demand for Russian oil and gas. However, there are factors limiting this growth. Russia has verifiable oil reserves of approximately 48.6 billion barrels, less than 5% of the world's total oil reserves. By comparison, OPEC members in Iran, Iraq, Qatar, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia together possess 64% of the world's oil reserves. Much of Russia's energy reserves are held in areas like Siberia, where the climate is extremely harsh and the territory is isolated from consumer markets. High costs for transporting the energy diminish its profit potential. Full exploitation of Russia's oil would also require considerable capital investment to modernize existing plants. Russia's energy pipelines are operating almost at capacity right now, and despite the cash crunch, Russia's government is unwilling to turn control of pipeline development over to private investors. Although Russia's oil and gas are extremely important to the international supply of energy and can influence the pricing policies of the OPEC oil cartel, Russia is not likely to be able to replace the role played by the Persian Gulf in the global oil supply. All the more reason why the U.S. has chosen to aggressively take over Iraq's oil fields. Though it might not make it as a leader in oil production, Russia can be a major player in international arms sales. Russia sits alongside the U.S., the U.K., and France among the top five arms exporters in the world. Russian arms sales have tripled during the past 8 years, and state officials project further growth. Last year, the country's exports of military hardware rose to $4.8 billion, a post-Soviet record. Weapons sales have become highly profitable for the Russian government since the end of the Cold War, which was marked by conflicts supplied with inexpensive Soviet weaponry exchanged for hard currency. Only oil-rich Iraq and Libya paid for their Soviet arms in full. Some African and Asian nations still owe Russia hundreds of millions of dollars for arms transactions made during the Cold War, and the chances of calling in these debts are slim. Now, Russia is invested in arming the world for profit rather than politics, and the result is that, while overall exports have decreased sharply from 3 decades ago, profits from these exports have soared. Over the last 5 years, Russia has sold more than $8 billion worth of weapons to countries including India, China, Iran, Iran, the United Arab Emirates, Vietnam, Greece, and Algeria. India and China account for almost three-quarters of all Russia's arms exports. Both countries are rearming and ready to pay not only for existing weapons, but also for the development of new killing machines. Much of Russia's military hardware was developed more than 10 years ago when the Soviet Union was handing the military industry as much money as it wanted. Today, there is not the same amount of government money going into new weapons development, so Russia is working in collaboration with investors from importing nations. While Russia works with China and India to develop new fighter planes and guns, the country is at a loss to deal with its Cold War stockpile of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. Huge quantities of these weapons of mass destruction have piled up in Russia without any effective regulation, supervision, or disposal plan. It amounts to a veritable banquet of lethal gear for terrorist groups, private laboratories, and the nuclear industry. Last year, the G8 pledged $20 billion over the next decade to secure Russia's stockpiles of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. But the richest countries in the world have yet to come through on their promise to protect humanity from the threat of Russian arms falling into the wrong hands. More than 20,000 nuclear warheads sit in 120 storage sites on Russian soil. An additional 120 nuclear submarines and 280 nuclear reactors await dismantling. Hundreds of tons of bomb-making equipment are dispersed throughout Russia's network of nuclear facilities, which employ almost a million people. Over the past decade, according to the International Atomic Energy Authority, there have been 18 incidents involving the seizure of stolen, highly enriched uranium or plutonium in Russia, including a foiled attempt by Russian workers at one nuclear weapons facility in 1998 to steal enough highly enriched uranium to make a nuclear bomb. According to Russian authorities, terrorists may have conducted at least two surveillance missions of nuclear warhead storage sites in Russia in the past year. Nearly 2 million rounds of nerve gas agents are housed in a decaying chemical weapons storage facility in Russia's Kurgan region. The rounds are each small enough to fit inside a briefcase, but contain enough poison to kill 100,000 people. According to official estimates, Russia's stockpile of nerve agents and other chemical weapons amounts to 40,000 tons. Protection against theft or seizure of biological pathogens in a number of the sites where they're stored has been described as inadequate by recent Russian intelligence reports. Thousands of Russian weapons scientists and technicians are currently unemployed, and there are plans to lay off many more unless the country can boost arms exports. These people could present an additional threat to international security as they put their knowledge on the market to make ends meet. If Russia is unable to maintain a strong arms exporting industry, it will have to try to direct this pool of underemployed mathematicians, chemists, and physicists toward the IT and biotech industries. The threat to human survival posed by Russia's unsecured mass of biological and nuclear weapons puts the threat posed by Iraq's yet-to-be-discovered arsenal into sharp relief. However, the U.S. administration has made clear that it has no intention of invading Russia. And lastly, the World Trade Organization, or WTO, appears set to face a repeat of its disastrous meeting in Seattle in 1999, after talks to agree on a framework for cutting agricultural subsidies ended in deadlock last week. Stuart Harbinson, who chairs the farm talks, admitted that he has abandoned an end-of-March deadline for drafting an agreement after he failed to resolve divisions between major trading powers. Harbinson had drafted an ambitious plan which would phase out food export subsidies over the next decade and cut import tariffs by 40%. However, he has met with fierce opposition from Japan and the European Union, which are protective of their domestic food production industries. Monday's deadline is the third that WTO negotiators have missed since the agriculture talks began 14 months ago. Now analysts fear that September's WTO trade ministerial in Cancun, Mexico, could turn into a repeat of the WTO meeting in Seattle 3 years ago, when negotiations collapsed amid bitter recriminations as protesters took to the streets outside. Reducing agriculture subsidies and providing access to generic drugs are the two critical issues that could leave the Cancun meeting a stalemate. The two issues are seen as a test of rich nations' claims that this latest round of global trade talks will cut world poverty. Wealthy nations have so far failed to deliver on the promises they made at the launch of this so-called development round of WTO talks in Doha, Qatar in 2001. This has left negotiators for developing countries understandably disappointed, angry, and skeptical. And this is a disappointed, angry, and skeptical Andy Beasney signing off, reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.